This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
We're with Professor John Butterworth, who's the head of the Physics and Astronomy Department at UCL and who is working on the ATLAS detector in CERN. Hi, John. It's a pleasure to have you on the Jodcast.
Well, thanks for asking.
It's a bit of a special interview because, well, as you may have noticed, John is a particle physicist and not an astronomer. We don't get very many of those on the Jodcast, but we do know that a lot of our listeners are interested in particle physics as well and the overlap between the two. So I'm just going to start off by asking you a little bit about your own research. And you've obviously been very involved in the search for the Higgs boson. So if you could just give us an outline of what you've been doing.
Sure. So we've been building the Large Hadron Collider for a long time. I got first involved in it in 2000, but I wasn't even one of the first people. But we started taking data properly in 2010. For the first 2 years of that data taking, I was leading one of the analysis groups at CERN, which was basically measuring what we call a standard model group, which meant we were measuring all the things we expect to see and seeing whether they are what we expect them to be, which is a necessary precursor to finding anything new, of course. And that was fun. And we're basically exploring physics in a new energy regime and seeing whether it matched our expectations. And kind of in parallel, I also developed a new way of looking for the Higgs boson. So when it's produced and it's traveling very fast, there are some particular advantages and challenges to identifying these kind of very fast-moving Higgs bosons, boosted Higgs bosons. And I did some work on that with some theorists and then with my student, and that brought it into the experiment.
Okay. So do you do most of your work now in London, or do you continue to go to CERN?
I still go to CERN and I still work on ATLAS, but you can obviously do a lot of that analysis remotely over the internet and things. So I go there a lot less than I used to. I was basically going every week for the first 2 years, which isn't very sustainable, I would say, in any sense of the word, mentally or ecologically or physically. So I still go, but it's more like once a month now rather than once a week. I run the department at UCL. I do all my management and administration bits of science in London rather than at CERN, which was part of the plan, really.
The boring but necessary bits, I suppose.
Can I jump in with a question, Steve? I know you were listening to the talk. It was you were saying it was sort of about demystifying some of what particle physics is about, which is really, really interesting. It made me sort of think, as an astrophysicist, I'm still not sure I quite understand exactly what a particle is. So when you were particularly talking about the Higgs, if I asked you a slightly unfair question, which is, what is it? What would you say?
Well, the problem is with language, and that particle and wave are both classical analogies to things which are not what is going on at the quantum level, of course. So a particle, the clear answer to what's a particle is it's an excitation in a quantum field, but that probably doesn't tell most people much. But there is a very good, I mean, the classical analogy of that is the Higgs boson is the physical sign that there is this background field in the universe that is what gives things mass, gives particles mass, and it's by interacting with this background energy that they get mass. And the Higgs boson is kind of a ripple in that. So what we're doing with the Large Hadron Collider is hitting the background field of the universe really hard and making waves in it. And those are the Higgs boson. Now, of course, it's not really a wave. It's a quantum excitation in that field. But still, that's a good way of thinking about it.
Is that the way that we understand every sort of particle, that there's a field?
Pretty much, yeah.
Everywhere.
That's right. There's a field of electrons, a field of photons between us now. And the difference with the Higgs is that most of those fields, if you go to the lowest energy state then of the universe, a bit of the universe, and you suck out of it all the energy you can, make it as the vacuum, you know, the lowest energy you can, it will have no electromagnetic field in it, no electron field, no quark field, no color field, but it will have a Higgs field because the lowest energy state of the universe has a non-zero Higgs field value.
And I guess we should maybe go into the fundamental thing, which is the Higgs is what gives things mass. So presumably that means there's Higgs particles everywhere, but it's not so easy to detect them?
I don't tend to think of it as Higgs particles everywhere. It's that this field is everywhere. Now, in principle, in quantum mechanics, a field can be looked at as a sea of foaming little particles popping in and out of existence, if that makes you happy to think of it that way. So again, it's this wave-particle thing. Neither is right. You've got to think of it in terms of quantum fields. But to make a real Higgs boson that you can actually lives long enough for that you can see it decay and you can see that it had the right mass, that takes a lot of energy, and they're not just everywhere. You have to work very hard to get those.
So in a sense, when you collide things in the LHC, does that excite the Higgs field in such a way that it produces a Higgs boson, as opposed to just interacting with it and not leaving a trace
behind?
That's right. Okay. I think that's helped me get my head around stuff a bit more, since hazy memories of undergrad sort of. Actually, talking about sort of large-scale scientific projects, astrophysics is going in that direction as well. Mm-hmm. And we have ULMA, the ULMA project, which I'm sure you've heard about, and soon to come SKA as well.
Yeah, and this P5, I don't know if you know, but today the US strategy for particle physics was released today.
Okay.
And it includes Dark Energy Survey and the Large-Scale Synoptic Telescope, which are essentially astrophysics projects. But there's a very strong link, in both in terms of the scale and the kind of science that's been done.
Yeah. Actually, what I want to ask you is, with the LHC, is that the sort of the biggest the project is going to get? I mean, is the next big particle project going to be something bigger, or is it going to maybe split up into smaller?
It's difficult to say. I think it can't really get much bigger, because you can't go bigger than global. So in terms of number of people, it can't get bigger. Now, it may be that we can build a bigger machine with, you know, as technology improves, you do more with the same amount of resource and the same number of people. That may happen if there's a good science case for it. But the whole world works at CERN now. You can't get bigger than the whole world yet, at least until the space scientists have done something and found some more worlds we can collaborate with. So in that sense, there's this kind of, there's a process going on now as to see what large-scale facilities we do need and who, where should they be sited, because they shouldn't all be in Europe. You know, that would be silly. And unaffordable as well. But it's also true that, I mean, the Higgs was quite special in that it was such an obviously important question to answer, plus we knew how to answer it. Now, there are plenty of open questions in particle physics and astrophysics, but it's a lot. It's a lot harder to. There's more diversity of approaches, and it's not. There's none of the approaches are really guaranteed to answer it, but all of them might. So, for instance, one of the big open questions is dark matter. Now, we might make dark matter at the Large Hadron Collider, which would be fantastic when we turn on again next year. But we might see it first in a direct detection experiment underground, where we see signals there, which there's hints and always controversies about that going on. Yep. Or you might see it in a telescope. You might see it in astrophysics or in high-energy neutrinos or something, where you see evidence for dark matter annihilating in the center of a galaxy, and that's the signal. And there's three completely different ways of addressing what's essentially the same physical problem. And obviously, you'd like all three of them to confirm each other, but, you know. But as to what, you know, there's also a whole area of neutrino physics, which is fascinating. We want facilities in that. It may turn out that that's more interesting than the energy frontier for some things. It certainly is for some questions. It may be that we want to spend more of our money there, more of our time there. Particle physics did come to a kind of a nexus, I guess, where we all, this had to be done before we could get on with the next thing.
Yeah.
There's a real live discussion as to what the next thing should be. There are plenty of options, there are plenty of exciting things to do, but we need to focus again and decide which ones. And it may be that it's not all just on one machine next time.
Sure. Actually, you mentioned dark matter. I think one thing that would be quite interesting for our listeners is a particle physicist's take on dark matter, because in astrophysics, it comes up a lot. We mention it, and, you know, we can measure its effects, see it through gravitational lensing techniques, and see, well, there's obviously something there.
Yeah.
But when you say sort of, oh, it would be great to find it when we turn the LHC back on in April, what exactly would you be looking for?
We know there are no candidate particles in the standard model that could be it, really. I mean, neutrinos are dark matter, but they're too light. They move too fast, so they don't match any of the data, any of the observations. So what we would do is we create things we can't see. That's a good experimental challenge. Normally, what you use things like conservation of momentum, same way that we can see neutrinos, essentially. We can't measure them directly, but we can see that one was created and it flew off in one direction and is balanced by other stuff. If we see too many events like that, there's something other than neutrinos going on. It could be dark matter. There are, you know, supersymmetry theories and things have candidates for it. Extra dimension theories have candidates for what that matter might be. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of, you know, different theoretical ideas, which often have different implications for how you would detect it otherwise. But in the LHC, you could make them in pairs, basically. And therefore, it's not entirely model independent, but it's more model independent than some of the other ways of doing it. So it's interesting, because I remember it reminds me of when I was a PhD student, the solar neutrino problem was still going, that there weren't enough neutrinos arriving from the sun. And it's like, there's something fundamentally wrong with particle physics, or the nuclear physicists don't quite know what they're doing with the sun. And of course, I thought, it's got to be the nuclear guys that are wrong, you know, because it wasn't. It was fundamentally new. It was the neutrinos had mass and were mixing. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that goes, no, those astronomers just got their observations wrong. Yeah. How can you invent a whole new particle just because there's something you don't understand in the sky? That's stupid. But, you know, the data is so compelling that there's something out there that, you know, the particle physics is wrong. It's incomplete, at least, and we need to find out why.
Well, that's definitely the astronomer's point of view. Oh, there's something there. We'll just need the particle physics to find out what it is.
It does bring on to one other thing, though, which is that some people do talk about alternative theories of gravity. And I'm wondering if there's anything, as you alluded to, you're still going to higher energies with the LHC. Is there anything that you could find out relating to the Higgs boson that might tell us anything about either alternative theories of gravity or dark matter itself?
Well, dark matter maybe, because there are candidates where dark matter doesn't couple to anything except the Higgs. And therefore, you know, you see it in Higgs decays, but you won't see it anywhere else. So the Higgs can be a gateway into those kind of theories.
Sure.
When it comes to gravity, very unlikely. I mean, if we saw evidence for extra dimensions, and that could bring gravity into the standard model, and those ideas were quite popular before we turned on. Now there's no evidence for it. They're less popular. It could still show up. But in most of those ideas were ways of getting around the need for a Higgs, actually, because a Higgs is such a weird thing. People didn't like inventing a whole field, a fundamental scalar particle or whatever, just to solve a bit of maths. They thought they were looking for other ways to solve it, so they invented extra dimensions instead, which sounds just as radical to me, but there you go. So those things still might show up and might teach us something about gravity, but they're going to be gravity at such small distance scales that I don't think it'd be relevant for the dark matter observations that astronomers are making anyway. I think that, you know, that's a very different distance scale and energy scale that's being dealt with there.
All right. Well, one final question is just that as astronomers, we were pretty disappointed that the LHC didn't make a black hole when you turned it on.
Yeah, it would have been nice. I mean, I presume you know that it would have been a very small black hole that would have been harmless and decayed as quickly as the Higgs decays, basically. Okay. But it would have been nice to see those, Hawking lost his bet.
Great. Well, thanks very much for talking to us today, John. And
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers.